This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. You're with Lynn, Xiaoning and Roshan. Now, in about half an hour, we'll be speaking with an expert about the defence white paper tabled in Parliament earlier this week. And before we get to that, do let us know what you think on the poll we have running on the BFM Twitter account. That's at BFM Radio. Because Malaysia is considering a defence budget of 1% of our GDP. So do you think the government is spending enough? Tell us what you think. But in the meantime, let's turn our attention to what's been happening over on the East Coast, specifically floods that have been ravaging Kelantan and Terengganu. Currently, over 15,000 people from both states have been displaced by flood waters, and tragically, two deaths have been reported, including that of a 7-year-old boy in Pasir Putih, Kelantan.
Deputy Prime Minister Dato' Sri Wan Azizah said yesterday that the government is willing to consider flood mitigation measures in Kelantan and Terengganu, which could cost hundreds of millions of dollars. Floods are an annual perennial issue in Malaysia. And why do we struggle with this disaster every year affecting thousands of people?
So for some thoughts on our flood disaster management, we turn to Mohamed Hafiz Mohamed Amirul, Head of Strategic Planning at Mercy Malaysia. Thank you for joining us, Hafiz. Now, what can we actually do to respond more effectively to the threat of floods and mitigate their damage in the short term?
To answer your question, number one, the short-term mitigation measures, I would say number one is on the improvement in forecasting and warning system that include changes in message dissemination and uses of forecast and early warning. This is very important. Okay, the country needs to develop a comprehensive model for warning the public, provide the public or rather provide the messages to the local communities along with technical assistance and recommendation, and make the degree of protection provided by these early warning systems for all citizens to be more equitable. So this is one example of a short-term mitigation measure that could shift us from the traditional thinking in terms of controlling flood through expensive engineering structure. Number two, my recommendation or my point of view on the short-term measure is on disaster risk reduction. So disaster risk reduction education through an all-of-society approach needs to be implemented so that citizens will have an understanding on ways to mitigate effects from flash flood and other disasters, as well as to prepare community to better reduce risk of disaster. On top of that, capacity exchange between governing agencies with local communities, the private sector, and other stakeholders is one way of doing this. And Mercy Malaysia has been actively facilitating this effort throughout the country and region for the past many years.
And how about long-term measures? What kind of strategies should we be considering to prevent floods from worsening in the future then?
To tackle this issue holistically, short-term measures are not enough. Long-term measures are very essential on developing and implementing sustainable flood mitigation policies that take a long-term outlook. Of course, this would require innovative approaches in developing and enforcing flash flood mitigation policies that do not compromise economic growth or development in general, but also ensuring that vulnerability of all groups of the community can be decreased. So some of this relates to land use planning and management, some to engineering, some to design, and some to hydrometeorology, et cetera, et cetera. So there's where there are multiple objectives in applying mitigation, there will have to be multiple disciplines involved.
So as we mentioned earlier, Deputy Prime Minister Dato' Sri Wan Azizah said that flood mitigation measures would require a very large allocation and quoted sums of 400 million ringgit for Sungai Golok and 700 million for Besut. Who bears the responsibility for this kind of investment? Is it the federal or state governments?
Well, investing in prevention and mitigation are key to incentivize risk-informed development and resilience, both at the federal and state level. In Malaysia alone, money spent on structural flood mitigation projects has increased, if I'm not mistaken, fourfold from 1.8 billion in the period of 2001 to 2005 to the range of near to 6 billion in 2006 to 2010. So this shows that the government's seriousness and commitment to prevent and reduce flood risk. However, there is a need for strong leadership and support to break down agency silos, departmental silos, in preventing and minimizing the lack of coordination between the large number of agencies involved at the federal, at the state, and also at the district level. So the silos need to, the division needs to go away. And also, what is unique, that Malaysia's National Land Code clearly demarcates the power to manage land to the state authority because land is a state matter, according to the Federal Constitution of Malaysia. Therefore, one of the main issues in ensuring effectiveness in disaster and flood mitigation infrastructure is to break down the silo between the federal and the state and to have seamless coordination between those two, together with other multiple agencies and other relevant stakeholders. So I think that is the challenges.
And Hafiz, closer to home, I mean, we are seeing more flash floods in KL too, although of course not at the level of damage that we've seen in Kelantan and Terengganu. And this is despite flood mitigation projects like the Smart Tunnel. So given the increasing impact of climate change, is our current infrastructure obsolete and how should we actually respond to this, especially in the dense urban areas?
Well, I personally believe that the infrastructure is not obsolete. But as you said, coping with multiple stresses and the amplification of disaster risks and shocks due to the changing climate means that the capacity of mitigation infrastructure and plans must also cope with the current and future stresses. Therefore, instead of only focusing on structural and engineered mitigation, such as the Smart Tunnel, I would say that nature-based solutions and soft measures must be adopted. Are the more impactful, responsive and sustainable ways in reducing disaster risk, in increasing our coping capacities towards shocks and stresses, as well as to balance back our whole ecosystem into becoming more sustainable and resilient in the long term. Of course, urban areas like KL do require such engineered infrastructure, but I think most importantly, human development, focusing on knowledge and capacities, as well as behavioral changes are much more needed for the city and also the country.
Thank you so much, Hafiz. And that was Muhammad Hafiz Muhammad Amirul, Head of Strategic Planning at Mercy Malaysia. Now, it's worth mentioning that Mercy Malaysia does actively do disaster management in Kelantan and Terengganu states as well as projects to do with ensuring water security. And this was something that I spoke about with their president a couple of months ago. So that was Datuk Dr. Ahmad Faizal Muhammad Perdaus, and that was on the Breakfast Grill. You can find that on the BFM app as well as on Spotify. But I think the point that Hafiz brought up at the end there, the human development and behavioral changes, that's also quite key because, as you said, Roshan, this is a problem that we face every year, almost without fail in our northern states. But one of the problems that has been highlighted before by Mercy Malaysia is the fact that the people and the communities in these disaster-prone areas are not often empowered with enough knowledge about the steps that need to be taken when a flood or a disaster hits.
Yeah, and we question this, right? Like you say, because it's an annual event. Why isn't there some sort of a training or programs actually developed and kind of, that everyone on the ground knows what they need to do? Because in certain countries where disasters happen quite frequently, like in the likes of Japan, even the very young know how to deal with earthquakes, with tsunamis. Not that they were not struck by a recent tsunami in, 10 years ago? Mm-hmm. But for sure, there is that kind of training given from very young in the schools and also in their local towns and villages.
It's about disaster mitigation and prep, right? We see in the movies where people have go bags, but this is something that we take for granted, and maybe it's something we need to start really looking at because at least it's a front line of mitigation.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So human development needs to be addressed first as well, and could perhaps even cost less rather than going straight to infrastructure flood mitigation, for example. But right now we are heading into the 7:30 news. Up next, after that, we'll be speaking with economist Enrico Tanuwijaya on Indonesia's potential move to starting a sovereign wealth fund. So be sure to stay tuned for that conversation after the news at BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.